I found Rusty in the office, mopping up the jail. We'd had a couple of drunks in there, and they missed the piss pot and puked in the bunk. So after hanging Judge Earwig fined them $2 each, we had to clean up. That's how it is for sheriffs. Mostly, we get to be chambermaids. Rusty emerged from the iron cage with a bucket of slop.
How are your lady friends?
They're getting into a cat fight. Natasha wants to marry me and quit the show, but Anna, she don't want nothing to do with me. And they're really steaming. It sure ain't easy being stuck so close to someone you're fighting with all the time.
They talk to you about getting took off the stagecoach?
Oh yeah, Natasha does. She wishes I'd have come to rescue her. These here masked bandits, they stopped the stagecoach, opened the door, and told the twins to get out. So the twins get into the cart, the bandits get their luggage, and away they go. They went direct to Heliotrope Pike. There wasn't any buying or selling of theater acts. Pike got the gals and put them in a show, and that was that.
You think they'd testify?
Natasha, she would if you asked her questions real slow so she could understand. But everything she'd say, Anna would say different. And the testimony would nullify.
I guess I hadn't thought of that. Well, who's telling the truth?
You need to ask?
No, I didn't. Natasha was. Anna was playing the spoiler.
They know who abducted them?
Maybe one, but the gunmen wore masks, and they plain don't know for sure. No one was talking.
You still want to marry them? The two fighting like that?
Both at once. That'd do it fine.
I told him about my talk with Reggie Thimble, and how the merchants wanted the outfit to leave town.
The cowboys, they've hardly walked into a saloon since the Carney show came, and before that, they were buying tonic from the medicine man.
Let's do a little walk down the Midway. If that outfit's gonna slide out of Doubtful tonight, there should be a few clues.
How are you gonna stop them? If they go, they go.
I got ways. I tell you, you tell Natasha, and my little plan won't work.
You're gonna round up the draft horses? That it?
Nope. They'll be tight guarded tonight. And someone will get hurt. I got better ideas.
That's what your ma always used to say, right?
Rusty didn't believe I had any wits about me, just the same as no one else did either. I never quite got used to it, but sometimes it came in handy, and it would tonight if the show was gonna pull up stakes after the Midway died down. We meandered along, watching the afternoon trade. It was mostly women and children trying their luck on the games. Scalawag Marvel, the little punk, was trying to win a doll by throwing a baseball at a row of bottles. He didn't know them bottles were loaded with concrete. I slid past the Midway into the camp where the wagons were sitting willy-nilly. It didn't look like an orderly place at all, but in some ways it was. There were cooking areas and bunking areas. The harness for each wagon rested in front of it, ready to be hooked up. Harness comes in all shapes and descriptions, but most of these rigs had breast collars, big straps that fit over the draft horse's chest. A draft horse really pushed into the chest collars, even though it looked like he was pulling the load. These were heavy-duty harnesses, intended to tie a draft horse to a big load. There were surcingles and bridles and reins and all the rest, but what I wanted most to look at was the collars. Without them collars, this outfit wasn't going anywhere at all.
You satisfied?
You know harness?
Some.
You pick out collars in the dark, maybe?
I imagine.
What we're gonna do, Rusty, is fetch us those collars and lock the whole bunch in the jail. We don't even need to get them all. Get enough harness collars, and this outfit ain't going anywhere at all. And we got Pike right where we want him.
I suppose your ma gave you this idea.
No, I thunk it up all by myself. You just study on where the collars are put and how they'll look in the dark.
I guess I get another day or two to woo my wives.
See, little Egypt. See the sights that thrilled Julius Caesar and Mark Antony.
That old Carney show was roaring away on the Midway. Everyone in the show was over there, gulling the last dimes out of cowboys and suckers. Me and Rusty, we done the job. The camp area, it was plenty dark, and no one was around except once when one of the old gals in the outfit came back to smoke a corncob pipe for a while. Finding the breast collars and unbuckling them and carting them out was a big job. Those things were hard to separate from all the rest of the harness. The breast collars run across the chest of the horse or mule, below the neck and windpipe, and are wider than most of the rest of the stuff. But neither Rusty or me was as good as Turk when it came to harness, so it took some doing. There were 14 wagons, each drawn by a pair of draft horses or big mules, and that meant finding 28 callers. It was no 10-minute job in the dark. But bit by bit, both of us collected what we could, stocked it away from camp, and went back for the rest, always keeping an eye out. The company was pretty well packed up. All the loose stuff was stowed away, and the outfit was going to roll out of Doubtful maybe around midnight when the rest of us were deep asleep. They planned to be far down one of the roads. They didn't let us know where they were going next, but they'd come up from Laramie, and I was guessing they'd be heading for Douglas. After we got all the collars we could find, unbuckled and in a heap, we carted them two at a time over to the jail and stuffed them all in a cell. That was heavy going, too, all those trips, hauling 40 or 50 pounds of leather and buckles. But about the time the carny show was winding down and people were quitting, we got them collars all locked up in a cell and got the jail all locked up, so there wasn't going to be any busting in or out.
I get to visit my Ukrainians for a while more, seems like.
I figured that was good for Rusty, but not for the Siamese twins, who were in a big spat over him and his designs. It sure must be hell to be locked into the same body as your twin, especially if one of you got favored and not the other. But that was the way things were, and they'd have to figure out living, because no one could help them.
We gonna sit here with scatterguns and guard the fort, or are we going to bed?
Go to bed. You go look after Riley. Me, I'm going to Bell's. If they come knocking, I'll just let them hammer on doors. I watched Rusty go to his cabin, which was not far away, and near Doubtful Creek. It was a quiet night with a soft breeze and not much of a moon, so it was plenty dark. I drifted toward Bell's boarding house, where I'd roomed ever since I came to town. I stumbled my way up the stairs and into my room. My guess was I wouldn't get through the night before all hell busted loose. Well, I was right. But it wasn't an hour into the night before there was a racket in the hall and then some thundering on my door. I lit a lamp and padded to the door. I sleep buck-ass naked in the summer, and I thought maybe I'd better get into something, so I hiked up my britches and then opened the door. Sure enough, there was Heliotrope Pike, beet red, breathing fumes, and looking ready to kill. A man behind him held a kerosene lamp.
Where is it?
You got some trouble?
The harness. You got it.
The harness?
Cut the crap, Pickens. Where is it?
Locked up tight, and it stays there until I cut it loose. Pike was backed by a pair of bruisers, roustabouts for his show, maybe the very men I was looking for. They were big, and they all simply pushed into my room.
You'll unlock, or we'll unlock. Your choice.
You threatening a law officer?
You gonna unlock or not?
You owe me the names of four abductors and whoever cranked up that abduction. Did you do it?
The keys, Pickens.
You do it, Pike? You put these roustabouts on horses and got a cart to carry the twins and went and grabbed them for your show, knowing you could get away with it?
The keys. Or do we have to force the issue?
I heard a commotion in the hall, and pretty soon Belle was floating up the stairs in her robe, a light in hand.
You're disturbing my boarders. You get.
It's all right, Belle. This here's Mr. Pike, and he says someone made off with his harness. So I'll get dressed and we'll see.
You in trouble, Cotton?
I knew she sometimes carried her little .32 caliber five-shot lady revolver in her robe pocket, and I didn't want her messing with these bruisers. These here are nice carny folks, Belle. They're fixing to leave town and mislaid some harness somewheres. Someone doesn't want them pulling out.
Horse pucky.
Pike was looking pouty. He was up a tree. He got caught trying to duck out at midnight and probably didn't suppose I could tell a breast collar from a surcingle. Or that I'd go after his harness at all. Most people, they want to immobilize an outfit, they go after the livestock. I got busy yanking pants up and stabbing toes in boots, all the while finding out what I could.
When did you fellers come up missing?
Pickens, cut the baloney. You've got it, and you're going to deliver it.
Well, I'll trade it for the names of them fellers broke the law around here. I collected my ancient Stetson and started to collect my scatter gun, but Pack, he just shakes his head.
I think not.
Both of them roustabouts had their hands hidden, and I didn't want to mess with that. So we rattled down the wooden stairs, and Belle let us pass. Pretty quick, we were in a quiet night and walking toward the jail.
I was surprised to find Rusty waiting at the door. He sure had a sense of trouble and was quietly waiting for trouble to come, mainly in the form of Pike and two big roustabouts. Rusty, he didn't say a thing, and I knew what we were about to do, and so did he. He opened the office door, and we pushed in, and he headed for a kerosene lamp, scratched a lucifer, and lit the place.
Now, Pike, what is it you're looking for?
There were no harnesses visible in there. The dark, barred jail door loomed, and behind it two cells, and the farther one had the goods in it.
You satisfied, Pike?
It became a moment of calculation. Rusty was armed. The roustabouts no doubt had some weapons. Pike, he wore his midway clothing, a suit, collarless shirt, and bowler. His hands were not in his pockets. He eyed the room, all its shadowy corners, eyed the barred jail door, and eyed the blackness beyond, knowing where the callers were, but also knowing there would be big trouble if he pushed. Someone had to open the jail door and open the cell door and not get trapped in there. And Pike didn't want to shoot a sheriff and deputy if he could help it, or get shot by me and Rusty.
We bought that act from a medicine show in Laramie. I wish I had a receipt, but I don't. It's all handshake in the business. That was the Zimmer outfit that came through ahead of us. These gals, they were pleased to join a real carny, not a medicine show. Those are hard shows. They wear people out and go broke. So we got two grateful women for our freak show tent.
I said nothing. He knew how to get his harness back.
This company, we stick together. It's a hard life being a carny, always on the road, no home to go to, and all we got is each other. It's us against the world sometimes. These fellas behind me, they'd give their life for me if I asked them. I'd do the same for them. So whatever we do, we're all together. You can't just throw a few of us in jail. We're in on everything. You want that? Collect every one of us and put us in those cells, and maybe you'd have what you want. There's no such thing as a few of us taking the rap.
Me? I said nothing. I didn't budge. I wanted the masked men who'd abducted them Ukrainian twins, and that's how it was going to end. His carny show was coming to an end right then and there. He had no choice. It was doomed if he admitted he had abducted them Siamese twins to put into his show, and it was doomed if I refused to give him his harness. I wasn't budging.
Wake up the judge. I want my harness back. You've stolen my property.
He was on to something. Earwig was the only man in Puma County who might get his harness returned to him, if he was lucky.
His name is Hanging Judge Earwig, and he usually cranks up his justice court at 10 in the morning after everyone's sobered up properly.
I want him now.
He's likely to dismiss your complaint if you pester him. He sure likes his shut-eye.
Now!
Hanging Judge Earwig stood in the dark doorway wearing a white nightshirt and a tasseled cap. A big Colt Dragoon revolver poked menacingly at us. We stood on his porch, a bullseye lantern lighting us as Earwig studied his visitors.
Court is in session.
Not in a courtroom?
No, right now. And whoever got me out of bed is going to lose.
Your lordship, we both did.
Oh, I like that. All right, you there with the carnival. You start this circus.
Heliotrope Pike at your service, sir.
Where did you get a name like that?
My mother was a florist.
Well, you look purple enough to qualify. All right, what's the complaint?
The sheriff here has stolen our harness. He has the breast collars locked in his cell room and won't release them. We're done here and we wish to leave.
Is that true, Sheriff?
You bet your ass, Your Majesty.
You are holding this company of law-abiding and honorable carny folk hostage? May I inquire why?
They have stolen goods, sir. They abducted two Ukrainian women, Siamese twins, off a stagecoach in Puma County and put them in the carnival as a freak show. I am detaining the show until they tell me who in their company stole the women, so I may bring them before your court on charges of abduction and involuntary servitude.
Well, that certainly is a mouthful. You just want to bust a few carny folk, right?
Justice, sir. They have stolen people and put them in bondage.
Do these Siamese twins object to being in the show?
One does and one doesn't.
Ah, so one wants to be in the show and one objects. And my solution is to slice them in two and let them go their separate ways.
Earwig was suddenly shifting around on his bare feet, enjoying this more than any decent man should.
Where'd you get the woman, Mr. Pike?
We bought the act in Laramie. Handshake deal. Don't remember who owned it.
You bought the act, did you?
Earwig's big dragoon revolver drifted around until it was pointed at Pike's heaving bosom.
Well, sir, that's how it is in my business. Acts are bought and sold. I wanted the Siamese twins. A sensation in any freak show, so I didn't mind shelling out.
Horse, Pucky Pike. Pure baloney. You're incapable of telling the truth to save your life, and that's putting it pretty cheap.
He waved the dragoon around until it ended up pointing at Pike's mustache.
We paid too much for the act, $100, and we haven't gotten it back.
So you stole his harness. Does the Office of Sheriff give you the right to steal citizens' property?
Well, my ma used to say that people love property more than life.
All right, I will render a verdict.
He eyed us, looking for signs of rebellion, but me and Pike, we smiled sweetly at his honor.
You, Sheriff, have stolen this man's property and denied him his liberty. Upon conclusion of this session of court, you will promptly return the harness and will not impede his departure. And I'm fining you $10 for theft and $5 for court costs.
Youch! That was a large piece of my monthly pay.
I'm fining you, Pike, $10 for lying to the court. And you will leave the women here. You will not take them, not even if they wish to go with you. If they were abducted, whether by you or the fantasy abductors you claim to have paid, they will no longer be part of your show.
But, Your Honor, our profit depends on the freak show.
$10 fine for protesting my verdict. That's cheaper than hanging you. And $5 in court costs. Now, bring the women here, and when I have them in my parlor, the sheriff will be instructed to release your harness.
All right. Go and fetch them twins and their baggage.
It took a while. Pike stood there in his bowler, looking solemn and staring at the moon. In time, the roustabout showed up with the women.
Oh, what are you telling?
Caterwauling about being deprived of their beauty sleep, the two wrapped in a single white robe. Rusty lifted his Stetson in admiration. The roustabouts had two big duffel bags full of the women's stuff.
This is an outrage. You're stealing my property.
That's another $5. All right, Sheriff. I have the contraband in hand. You shall go to the jail and release your contraband and return it to Mr. Pike forthwith. And leave the fines in my charity jar in my chamber.
I sure hate to let them get away with abduction, Your Honor.
$5, Pickens. The court has spoken.
I backed off. Me and Rusty and Pike and his roustabouts headed for the jail. Once inside that dark place, I unlocked the jail door by the light of the lamp and then unlocked the cell with the harnesses heaped in it.
I never forget. It's not over.
The roustabouts collected armfuls of harness and headed out, and when they returned, they had half a dozen more carny people with them, and in short order, they carted away every bit of harness we had dumped in there. They'd sort it out, harness the outfit, and ride away, probably before dawn. It sure ticked me off, them people not getting tried for abduction. But maybe there was a little good in Earwig's justice. The Siamese twins, they were still here and free to choose their future if they could ever agree. And Rusty, he was sort of smiling to beat the band. We finally got them carny people out of the sheriff's office, and it wasn't far from dawn. That's when the twins showed up, looking a little bit put out, each of them dragging a duffel bag full of her stuff. They came along on the street like a wide ghost, looking real forlorn. Well, Rusty, my ma always says when opportunity knocks, you got to open the door.
Ladies, come into my parlor.
They weren't taking it kindly and dragged their duffel up the stone steps and into the sheriff's office. In fact, Anna looked like she was about to collapse, if not cry her heart out. They were homeless. Maybe Belle could work out something?
Belle, hell! They're mine now.
He helped them wrestle their duffel bag and got them into the office where the single lamp still threw buttery light over the gloom. Anna, she was crying. Natasha, she looked better for the wear and kept eyeing Rusty as if he'd solved their problems. You got any ideas?
Yeah, you get out of here and let me talk to him.
I gotta stay and protect their virtue. About then, the carny show pulled out. We heard the clatter of a lot of hooves and then a dark parade in the deep of the night, the roustabouts either walking beside the wagons or driving them from seats up top. The Pike Brothers Carnival was leaving doubtful. And maybe it was good riddance. The Siamese twins, they rushed to the door and watched the moonlit parade and heard the hollow clop of hooves muffled by night breezes.
Anna was crying. Great tears slid down her cheeks. Natasha watched silently, and I knew that a terrible gulf now divided the two women locked into one body. Maybe Anna didn't mind being stared at, being the center of attention on a tawdry little tent stage. But Natasha, she had come to a different view of her fate and was filled with the dream of marriage to Rusty. Somehow, some way, some place. The carnival slid out of town, its clopping and clatter gone. And then both the Siamese twins began weeping. There in my office, their shared misery for once overwhelming the pain of having to cope with each other when they each harbored a different dream. But what could they do now? At least in the carny, they were fed and clothed and sheltered and befriended, too.
You haven't got much English, but maybe you'll follow me. I'm putting you in my room at Belle's boarding house. The little bed in there, it's wide enough. Can you walk a couple of blocks?
Da.
Rusty, you bring their duffel and I'll help them. They got some stairs to work up.
We got to Belle's about when there was a thin blue line of light riding the skin of the earth and got them upstairs into my little cubicle a few minutes later. There was a little bed, a dresser, a window showing some light, a wash basin and pitcher, and a few hooks on the walls.
Oh, first room since Ukraine.
It was nothing to me, but a treasure for them. A long time since they'd had a room of their own.
Okay, ladies, this is your home for now. I'll get my stuff out in the morning.
Well, I thought Doubtful Wyoming had finally got free of all those road shows, but I was wrong. In the dog days of August, what should roll in but Billy Bones' Wild West? I didn't know what that was all about, but I learned soon enough. It was about half rodeo and half Buffalo Bill. There was a mess of stuff like trick shooting and a couple of female sharpshooters and some scenarios from the old Indian Wars, but there was also a mess of rodeo competition. Bull riding, roping, bronc riding, and a final act involving catching a greased pig. They set up shop over beyond Saloon Row. They sure knew where to get their cowboy audiences. I braced for trouble. Rodeo competition was a rough game, and cowboys got into brawls, and I knew my two jail cells were going to be jammed and overflowing real quick. But me and Rusty were up to it. This outfit soon had big bills plastered on every stray wall around town, and they were all promoting one thing. Miss Quick, trick shot artist, the surest shot in the female universe. That didn't seem like good advertising to me. Cowboys don't want to get shot at by a female, and they don't want to get beaten in shooting contests by a female. But there she was, in color, wearing fringed leather skirt, boots, a big creamy blouse, and a flat-brimmed hat. And she's hefting a revolver in one hand and a rifle in the other and smiling away like she knew what everyone was thinking.
I think we got trouble, Rusty.
He didn't reply. He was busy courting the Siamese twins and couldn't be bothered with law enforcement.
I might see if I can outshoot her.
If it was a thinking contest, you'd lose.
That's when Billy Bones himself walked into the sheriff's office. He was a skinny feller, dressed in black. Black boots, black breeches, black shirt with cream embroidery on it. He was black-haired, too, and lantern-jawed, and I could see he would have a black beard if he didn't shave, because there was a 5 o'clock shadow at 9 in the morning.
Sheriff, Bones here, and that's my outfit setting up.
Looks like you got a mess of cowboys out there.
Yeah, mostly jailbirds. I hire jailbirds straight out of the pen as roustabouts and livestock handlers. Once in a while, they turn into cowboys. Nobody ever bothers us.
That sure gives me peace of mind.
Well, I always want to talk to the law when we come into a town. We like to open with a shooting contest.
And I'm the bullseye?
Sort of. Here's the cookie. We challenge any sheriff or deputy to a sharpshooting contest with our Miss Quick. She's quick, all right. She'll shoot the hair off your balls.
I don't think...
That's what we heard. But you're fast with a gun. So, we'll have a little sharpshooting contest. You against Miss Quick. Shotguns and clay pigeons, fast draws, trick shots, and action shots from horseback. If you win, you get a $20 prize. If we win, we get out of jail free.
What would put you in jail?
Jailbirds always have a yearning to return to their happy lives in the pen. I have an awful time keeping them out and free.
Well, that sure is interesting.
Good. We open at 4, and the sharpshooting contest is at 4:30 while there's plenty of light. Bring your own artillery.
But I ain't agreed to it.
Oh, don't be a sissy, Pickens. If you don't show up after we've promoted it, your name's Mud in Puma County. Likely you'll get fired.
Well, I know all about that. Bones was gone as fast as he blew in, and I was in for a shooting contest. Not that Miss Quick had any chance against me. My ma, she always said I was good with my hands, which made up for being slow. I sure wondered what this Miss Quick looked like. I thought she might be a fake. Women can't shoot worth a damn. Put some little guy, a real sharpshooter, in skirts and powder his face, and who'd know the difference? That was it. These here shows, they didn't mind stretching truth a little. Well, they were good at publicity. Next I knew, Mayor George Waller dropped by with a word of encouragement.
Here you're up against some female sharpshooter, Cotton. The honor of Puma County's at stake, but you'll whip her handily?
I'll whip her. No woman shoots as good as me.
Your job depends on it.
Before the afternoon was half done, Reggie Thimble had seconded that. The supervisors were unanimous. Win or walk out of the job. I wouldn't let myself get overconfident. Just because she was billed as Miss Quick didn't mean she was. I was the fastest draw in Wyoming, and a few people planted 6 feet down could attest to it. And I was real good on horseback. I could hit the ace of spades at a gallop. I got out my revolver, cleaned it, worked the mechanism, and pulled it smoothly out of its holster a few times. I had a reputation for being fast with it, but in truth, I was careful. I figured one slower good shot was worth a bundle of worthless fast shots. Let people think I was fast. The only thing that mattered was accuracy.
You'll win.
Of course I win, Rusty. How could I not win? I didn't need his encouragement. I cleaned my rifle and polished up my shotgun and made sure I had plenty of shells and cartridges. They might cost a little, but I'd soon have $20, and that would replace them with cash left over. I don't wear my holster much. Doubtful didn't need some fool gunslick of a sheriff making a public display of his weapons. I usually carried a billy club, and I could poleaxe people with that. But if all them cowboys wanted a show from me, and the city fathers too, they'd get it.
Howdy. I'm Amanda Quick.
Well, howdy yourself. You come to look me over, did you?
Ah, just to make your acquaintance. You sure are a big galoot.
And you're a little one. 5 feet?
At an inch.
You're real pretty. I thought that might disarm her. If I told her she was real pretty, out there on the firing line, she'd melt like wax in a candle.
Oh, yeah, big and strong and manly. You'll want to prove that males can beat females.
Oh, no, I want to prove that sheriffs are better shots than theater people. She sure was cute. She had little dimples on her cheeks when she smiled, and merry blue eyes, and was sort of strawberry blonde, and was built with just the right curves. And she was dressed just like in the posters, with a fringed leather skirt, a loose blouse good for shooting, and a perky little western hat. If I win, you gotta marry me. I don't know where that came from. It just sort of bubbled up and erupted. It was like proposing in front of Old Faithful Geyser.
Well, usually they don't ask for that. They want all the benefits without the ring. And if I win, will you marry me?
Holy cats. That caught me with my drawers around my ankles. You bet. But the $20, it sounds more like what I'm after.
I'll see you on the field.
She jounced away, leaving me love-struck and bumble-headed. I didn't want to marry her, but now I was stuck. I'd win easily, and then what? Hanging Judge Earwig would be reciting the vows, and I'd be a cooked goose. Rusty, he was watching all this with a glint in his eye. Don't you say nothing. Time sure dragged. I was mad at Rusty, mad at Billy Bones and his show, mad at shooting contests, and mad at that perky little gal I didn't like one tiny bit. She was so small, I didn't know how she could lift a rifle or a shotgun. But according to all the publicity on them broadsheets pasted on every wall, she was a true marksman and not just standing. Put her on a speeding horse and she was all the better. It finally got late in the afternoon, so I strapped on my holster and revolver, collected my rifle and shotgun and a mess of shells and cartridges, and set out for the east side of Doubtful. People greeted me along the way, and it dawned on me they'd been waiting.
lining the sidewalks, planning to cheer me along. There were a few women, of course, wanted Miss Quick to whip me. I knew the type. They wore Amelia Bloomer's pantaloons and devoted themselves to making life difficult for men. But I ignored them. Waller was even waving a Wyoming flag, and Sammy Upward motioned to me to stop in for a drink, but I shook my head. I could whip her with six drinks in me, but I decided not to take the chance, just in case she got some lucky shots in when I was not paying attention. It sure was a victory parade right down Wyoming Avenue. Me with my two long guns and the short one. Turk was watching, but he wasn't properly worshipful and was grinning like a hyena. I'd get even with him after I won my $20. Well, by the time I got to the showgrounds, there was a mess of people there, including most every cowboy that could escape the local ranches. Bones had set up a shooting area and roped off the crowds, and there was Miss Quick, all dolled up and cute as a bug, waiting to sacrifice herself to me. She smiled. I tipped my hat, and then we were on. Billy Bones, dressed in fringe and beaded buckskins, got the show on the road. With a wave, he ushered in a passel of riders and a bugler and a flag bearer, and these got into a smart trot, while the bugler bugled away all sorts of stuff that sounded like the army. Tattoo, boots and saddles, charge. And the fellow with the flag broke into a trot and ran the banner around the arena while the cowboys cheered, except for the old Confederates, who stayed real silent. But the noise of it all was real fine, and he got the show off to a bang-up start. Then Billy Bones, on a white stallion, comes trotting to the center, and he lifts his megaphone and begins bellowing at the mob.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I introduce Miss Amanda Quick, ace sharpshooter, trick shot artist, and bullseye champion.
She came sailing out, wearing a soft-fringed buckskin skirt, boots, a generous silky blouse, and a flat-crowned hat with a bright pink hatband. All them cowboys, they whistled and lusted, and some got real silent.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the local marksman and champion and lawman, the famous, the legendary, the invincible, Cotton Pickens.
I guess that was me. So I trotted out there, lifted my old hat, bowed and smiled. There was nothing to do but shake Miss Quick's dainty little hand, so I pumped it a few times and we both smiled. I was going to clean her clock, so I smiled a heap. Some gun bearers brought our stuff out. They would do the reloading and all of that, so we could concentrate on the contest. This was going to be good. This here lady, she was so small she could hardly lift a long gun, so I had all the advantage.
All right, you fine citizens of Puma County, watch this. Our first event will be trap shooting. 10 clay pigeons, and may the best, person win.
Well, ladies first. Her man handed her a shiny little 410 gauge shotgun, a toy gun for a toy lady, and I smiled. That pea shooter couldn't pop a pigeon. The fella at the traps, about 50 feet away, was all set, so she nodded. The clay bird whizzed along a flat trajectory, maybe 15 feet up, and she shattered it easily. She handed the gun to her Batman, and he gave her another, loaded and ready. The cowboys whistled. Some of them had gotten beers from the saloons and were sucking hard, soaking up enough suds to begin making smart observations. Well, the way this was set up, she would tackle all 10 birds, and then it'd be my chance to beat her. She sure was cute. She wasn't paying attention to me, any, or the crowd, which was making anti-female remarks. She'd heard them all before, and they bounced off her back. Instead, she was all business. She blew away the second and third birds, took a corner out of the fourth, which counted as a kill, knocked the fifth to smithereens, almost missed the sixth from leading it too much, but nicked it, and that counted as a kill. After each shot, she traded guns with her loader, one of the show's roustabouts, and smiled. It sure didn't take long to finish the job. She'd knocked down every bird, and with that toy gun, too. She smiled sweetly, and I was thinking I wouldn't mind marrying her. But only if I could shoot better than her. Who'd want to be married to a sharp-shooting woman? It sure was something to ponder. So she waited quietly for the applause to wither away, and then it was my turn. Rusty, he had a nice sheriff office 12-gauge ready for me, and I took it. I didn't need anyone reloading, so I waved him away. I always do a job myself. I hefted the 12-gauge and nodded. They sent a bird sailing across the field, and I blew it to smithereens.
I stuffed another shell in, blew the next one to bits. The boys watching all this, they started whistling and laughing. I sure was having a fine time. And Miss Quick, she forced a smile on her pretty lips and clapped as I knocked each bird down. It was so easy, I was almost feeling embarrassed. It didn't take long before I had permanently ruined 10 clay pigeons, and then the local crowd, they was huzzaing the local sheriff, and I was feeling just fine.
Excellent shooting. A tie. Both contestants not missing a trick.
I bowed to the crowd. Miss Quick, she just smiled.
And now we'll have some handgun competition. Knock a hole through the ace of spades at 20 feet. Best of 6 attempts.
In other words, empty one loaded 6 gun. Well, that would be a piece of cake. They rigged up a pole with the ace of spades sticking out of it. I'd heard that in the show, Bones himself would hold the card in his fingers and let her blow the spade away. But not this fine August afternoon, with heat rising from the parched clay and a mess of boozy cowboys watching. And Bones might trust Miss Quick not to shoot his fingers off, but he sure didn't trust me. She punctured the spade, a little high, and Billy Bones paraded the card around the perimeter where everyone could see it. She had a way of lifting the revolver, sighting down its barrel, and shooting in one graceful movement. Her second shot was dead center. Her third a little left. And her fourth and fifth right through the ace. Not bad, I thought. I was beginning to respect her. She used a little .32 caliber revolver and knew what she was doing. I would use my old .44, which was big and heavy, and put the bullet right where I intended. I punctured those aces of spades each time, and we were tied once again. Miss Quick was smiling, and I was waving my hat, and everyone was having a fine old time. It sure was a fine old afternoon.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, a true test of marksmanship. A contest that separates the gifted from the brilliant. I give you shooting clay birds out of the sky with rifles. The contestants will take turns, 5 in all.
The cowboys, they began clucking at that one. How could you shoot a clay disc sailing through space 50 feet away with a single bullet? I confess I didn't like the odds on that one. But maybe it would be a tough act for little Miss Quick, too. If she could do it, she was some sort of genius. The spectators knew it, too. And there was a sort of buzzing as they whispered about it. But Miss Quick, she was smiling to beat the band, and her man handed her a nice rifle of a caliber I could only guess at, but not too large. She was still working with smaller, ladylike weapons. She seemed to be enjoying herself, though. She must have blown a few cartons of bullets away practicing this one. She nodded, the keepers tripped the trap, and a clay bird sailed out into the blue. She followed it for a moment, squeezed, absorbed the recoil, and the bird sailed on unscathed. The crowd erupted. She'd finally missed one. Me, I studied my old battered .44, which used the same cartridges as my revolver, and I suspected I was in for it this time. It was a worthy old rifle, and I knew its quirks, but blowing a clay disc out of the sky would be pushing its limits. I nodded, followed the gray little thing, led it, fired, and watched it sail to earth untouched.
Even up!
Miss Quick, she took a loaded rifle from her Batman, smiled again, nodded, and watched the target sail. The clay disc disintegrated. Holy cats. I missed that next shot, so I was one down. And now the cowboys were jeering.
Turn in your bag.
Even Reggie Thimble got into the act. The amazing Miss Quick nailed the next bird, and the next, and the next. And I was blowing lead through thin air. That sure was an experience.
Congratulations. I don't think I'll marry you.
She thought that was pretty fine humor. She didn't know I was plumb serious. That mess of friends watching this show, they turned real silent.
Now, wasn't that outstanding? Let's give Miss Amanda Quick a good hand. Have you ever seen anything like it?
There sure were a lot of whistles from the cowboys, and Miss Quick curtsied in each direction, cheerfully acknowledging the cowboy cheers coming her way. At least I didn't have to curtsy to any mess of cowboys, so there was some good in it. Winning isn't everything, you know. A feller has to stay dignified and stern. Then old Billy Bones, looking real cheerful, announced the next one.
And now, my good friends in Doubtful Wyoming, we will have an exhibition of equestrian marksmanship. While we set up that bullseye target over there and we ready a steed for each contestant, I'll tell you what we're about to see. Each contestant will take 3 passes at the target while mounted on a galloping steed, which the contestant will control with knee commands. Miss Quick will shoot at the target using an upside-down rifle. We know that your fine sheriff has not had occasion to fire his weapon upside down, so he is free to compete using his rifle any way he wants to. The contestants will take turns, of course. Ladies first.
Well, I thought I had a real good chance if they didn't put some trick horse under me that would ruin my shot. Miss Quick swiftly mounted on a fine gray charger and was handed her rifle by her Batman. Using only her knees to control the horse, she circled around the arena, waving to the cowboys and merchants, blowing kisses to all of them, and finally she headed toward the far end, put the horse into a trajectory that would take her past the bullseye, and spurred the horse. It leapt ahead, and she leveled her upside-down rifle and trigger finger on top rather than underneath, and when she was opposite the target, she snapped the shot. Dead center. A hole smack in the middle of the middle. My turn. I climbed up on the nag they gave me, gave him a quick whirl, and was satisfied. It was an improvement on Critter. I cut loose, leveled my .44. I watched the paper disintegrate where I hold. It was a good shot, but a bit off-center, an inch or two high left.
Well, that was a fine exhibition. Just fine. Outstanding.
But now, the cowboys were hooting at me. And that's how it went the next 2 passes. She did fine. She did better while holding a rifle that was upside down.
Ladies and gentlemen, we will now show you the targets.
Billy's roustabouts carried them around the edges of the arena.
Your man Cotton Pickens did just fine. Outstanding shooting. But I'm proud to say our little Miss Quick bested him.
Turn in your badge, Pickens.
Hey, one thing, Reggie. You'd have to pay her more than me.
Rusty wandered over to that big field after the Wild West show and got to studying the clay pigeons that we'd shot up. I don't know what had started him doing that, but he did it, and he found some pigeons that weren't broken up and that were peppered with little pits in them, especially where a part had broken off. He slid a couple of those in his britches and came back to the sheriff's office. Reggie Thimble and some others really did want me to turn in my badge. Folks were saying they didn't feel protected in Pima County anymore because some pipsqueak girl had shown the whole world that I couldn't hit a barn side at 10 feet. The one that annoyed me the most was Delphinium Sanders, the banker's wife. She wanted me to ask Miss Quick to be the sheriff of Pima County. She thought the idea of a female sheriff was just fine. Miss Quick might be a trick shot, but could she drag drunks to the lockup and wrestle some bank robber to the ground? They were all just salivating at the chance to get rid of me, but I wasn't going to be got rid of. I'd stay glued to my job until they got tired of getting rid of me. That's how it had been since I got hired to clean up Doubtful. Rusty waited patiently for all those mean-spirited people to get out, and then he laid the 3 clay pigeons on my desk. 2 had an edge nipped away, and 1 was intact.
I waited until they got past the rodeo stuff and thought I'd have a look.
What am I supposed to do, put these up on the wall?
You got eyes, don't you?
So I studied them, not making much of it.
She's shooting sand from her rifle. Turned her rifle into a little shotgun.
Sure enough, the surfaces of the clay birds were pitted, especially along the edges where they had a piece blown off.
Sand did that.
She's a good shot.
Sure she is, a fine shot. But she was giving herself an edge you didn't have.
That sort of relieved me. Maybe I'd ask her to marry me after all. I was a better shot than she was. If I was going to fall for a gal, she'd better not outdraw me.
Sand. I'd heard about it. Someone was telling me once that's how Annie Oakley does it. She's so good, I don't believe it. But you never know. This little sweetheart, she's too good to be true. And I got the itch to look at those targets, those that weren't busted up.
I eyed the clay birds. Show these little pigeons around, and maybe the town would get off my back. But I decided that for now, I'd just let it be a secret. I was sweet on her, and didn't want to hurt her any. She had a way of dimpling up when she smiled that made me think of a little white cottage and rambling roses, and a big double bed. The next day, I went to watch the show again and sure took some ribbon.
You gonna study how it's done?
That's how Turk was. He was always asking if I was gonna study how to get critter tamed, and I always told him I didn't want critter tamed. I wanted him ornery enough so no one would mess with him but me. The show was just fine. Billy Bones could sure put on some star-spangled entertainment. The crowd was sparse that afternoon, mostly because it was threatening to rain, and not even weathered cowboys want to stand around through a mess of showers. Not even for Miss Amanda Quick, world's finest sharpshooter. She was wearing those same embroidered buckskins and white boots, and a big loose blouse that wouldn't constrict her movement. There wasn't a contest this time. She just went through her stuff, adding some tricks to the display. She shot a playing card in half, aiming at its edge, not its flat side. She shot a cigar from Billy Bones' mouth. He wasn't even nervous. She had a few more equestrian tricks, too. She shot at targets from under the neck of a galloping horse and did it bareback. I sure didn't know how she could lean forward along the neck of a racing nag, lean over one side without falling off, aim a revolver from somewhere under the nag's jaw, and hit a bullseye. But she was doing it, and all them cowboys, they finally started clapping. Who'd ever seen the like? Me? I was just getting more and more sweet on her. It was making me sort of grumpy. She'd pull out of town in a few days, and the show would go to the next town, and that'd be the last I'd ever see of her. The rodeo part of the show was pretty good, too. Calf roping, bull riding, bronc riding, stuff like that. But there were acts in between, including a mess of wild Indians chasing a stagecoach. We hadn't had anything like that around Doubtful for a few years, with all the tribes stuck on reservations. But it was fun to see all the roustabouts in the show painted up and wearing bonnets and shooting blanks at the stagecoach. Well, on my way back into town, I passed Bell's, and there was Rusty, and stretched on the sidewalk were the Siamese twins. Natasha was out cold, and Anna was stuck with waiting until Natasha woke up so they could move again. Trouble?
Yeah, Anna got mad at Natasha again and bonked her with a skillet. You see that lump? She hit her sister so hard it knocked her out. There's nothing she can do since Natasha's got to wake up first.
That was assault, and I had laws to enforce, but I'd have to wait until Natasha came around. Belle, she was applying cold compresses to Natasha's blonde hair, while Anna stared enviously, not getting any attention at all. It sure was hell to be a Siamese twin, I thought. Natasha finally shook her head, glared at Anna, and then moaned and felt the lump on her head. All right, ladies, I got to haul you to Hanging Judge Earwig.
Oh, but you can't.
There was an assault, and I'm sworn to uphold the law. I was feeling stubborn. I just got whooped by a button-sized sharpshooter, and I was ready to take it out on the nearest offender. Ladies, you get up and follow me.
I'm sick. I need to lie down.
You just got assaulted, Natasha. Now come along now.
Humph! If you do this to them, find some other place to board. You're a beast.
Belle, I got the law to enforce. Rusty just shook his head and eyed me as if I belonged on some other planet. We made our slow way to the courthouse, up the stairs, while Natasha groaned, and into the chamber, rank with Judge Earwig's underarm odor. Both Belle and Rusty tagged along.
Now, what have we here?
Assault, Your Honor. This one here, Anna, conked this here one, Natasha, with a frying pan, and I will show you her bump as evidence. Earwig studied Natasha's bump, which bulged from her head just above the forehead.
You, Lumpy, the alleged victim. Tell me what happened.
I don't know the words.
Well, hum a few bars, and I'll see if I can come up with any. If you want justice, you better learn the words.
The courtroom was hot, and he probably wanted to go home and soak his bunions in Epsom salts.
I saw it, and I'll tell it.
Are you prejudiced on one side or the other?
You bet your ass I am. These two have been at each other ever since they got moved in. The one on the right, Anna, didn't want to leave the Carney show. The one on the left, Natasha, is being courted by the deputy here, Rusty Irons, and wants to marry him. And now the fight has turned violent, and neither one is going to win it.
Is that so, Natasha?
Duh.
I'll take that for a yes. Natasha, do you have any means to make a living?
Yes, with the show.
That was Anna. Earwig took a moment, and then pass judgment like Solomon of old.
Vagrants, I sentence you to 2 days in the county jail.
But your honor, the cot in the jail is too narrow. And you can't put the victim in prison. Anna did it, not Natasha.
I'm punishing them for vagrancy, deputy. They'll both go in. Sleep on the floor for all I care. It was good enough for my father, wasn't it?
You're a beast!
Hanging Judge Earwig smiled ear to ear with the compliment.
You're not so bad yourself. I'll suspend the sentence if someone puts $10 in the charity jar.
Rusty dug into his britches, pulled out 2 fives, a fifth of his monthly wage, and stuffed them into the charity jar. Earwig was, of course, his own favorite charity.
Say, where are they from?
Lviv, Ukraine, Your Honor.
Ah, a Lviv triangle.
You just cost me a fortune!
Well, propose to both, Rusty.
Oh, fat chance any preacher would marry all of us.
When I saw Big Nose George barreling into my office, I knew there was trouble afoot. And I pretty well guessed what it was about.
The hooligans have busted loose. Big Finn and Mickey from the orphan train.
Where'd they go?
They vanished. On 2 of our fastest broncs. With 2 more they took for their joyride.
Well, what's the deal?
They stole a hoof rasp. And bit by bit, they filed away at their irons, but not the chain. They worked on the irons around their calves under their pants where no one could see.
I don't know how you can cut iron with a hoof rasp.
Well, they done it and got the irons off somehow. They got clear of the place at night and were missing this morning.
Armed?
Hell yes. There's no lack of weapons around the Admiral Ranch.
With what?
We're still sorting that out. But they have sidearms and long guns and boxes of shells.
Any food?
We don't know. They sure been planning it. So probably they do. Maybe both spare horses carry packs.
Will they make any threats? Talk about going somewhere?
They kept to themselves. Real quiet.
You spot any trail?
In August? Bone dry? Hard clay?
Well, you got trackers and they'll find green apples.
They stayed on main trail. Lots of apples. Plenty still green.
You got any hunch?
Those two were so sour. I think they're more interested in evening up some scores than leaving the country. They never made friends with anyone around there. It was them against the world.
Well, that's good. We'll start there. But you put your ranch hands out and see if you can find a trail. You fellas hunt them out of town. I'll start around here. Evening up the score means me, Rusty, Earwig, mostly. Thanks, Big Nose. We'll be watching our backs.
You gonna get up a posse?
You're the posse. I'm deputizing you. Raise your hand. Good, you're a deputy. Here's your badge.
No damn good. Horse theft, saddles and tack, pack frames, weapons and shells, food, and who knows what.
Also escaping a sentence. Earwig sentenced them to a year in the chains.
Yeah, that too.
All right, these orphans are armed and dangerous, have made threats, and probably plan to do them all. Watch your backs. Big Nose left. I buckled my revolver on, checked the loads, collected a short-barreled scatter gun, and headed out. Rusty was off, spending some time with Riley. That was one good orphan. Hanging Judge Earwig needed to be told and protected. If I could guess at the motives of 2 bitter hooligans who hated their chains, I'd say they'd go straight for the judge, get him first, and finish him off. Boys, even smart boys, might prefer revenge to escape. Not that I'm right very much, but a lawman's got to start somewhere, and that's where I went with it. I left a note for Rusty to watch out and line up some help if we needed it. I angled across the square to the courthouse, but Hanging Judge Earwig wasn't around, which made me uneasy. Well, he often lunched at Barney's Beanery, so I went over there and didn't find him. Next, I headed for Earwig's house on the north side, where all the fancier people lived. The house looked quiet, but the front door was open, and things didn't seem right. I studied the windows, looking for faces or the glint of weapons, but I saw nothing at all. Anybody home? The only answer I got was silence. Mabel should have replied. I edged behind the big cottonwood, removed my old hat, waved it, but no one shot at it. I checked neighboring buildings. The hooligans were smart enough to set up a trap and watch me walk in. I couldn't see inside of them, but the windows were closed and nothing was poking out of any of them.
The Earwigs had a buggy, and it was still in the carriage barn back of the main house. Time to go in. I pulled my revolver, raced straight for the open front door, and threw myself sideways when I reached the porch. Nothing happened. I got down on all fours, peered low through the door, but no one put a bullet between my eyes.
All right, Mickey, Big Finn, hands up, come on out. Alive or dead, your choice.
Nothing. The hooligans probably weren't there, but maybe a couple of bodies were. I worked around the house, avoiding windows, darting up to look inside and lowering my head. Nothing. What I dreaded was something like two dead people lying in one of those rooms. I burst through the rear door. I found no one in the kitchen or parlor or pantry. It sure was quiet in there. I had my .44 in hand, ready to use it, but it was a worthless piece of iron just then. I saw no sign of violence or trouble except the open door, but I could nearly sniff it. This house had been invaded. Judge and Mabel Earwig had been hurried away, and I didn't have a clue where to find them. It made me sick to think about all that. I stood there on that porch trying to fathom where the hooligans went and what they had in mind. My ma, she always said it was hard to get inside someone else's head and know what's what. But I had to now. There was no time to waste. The Earwigs would soon be dead if they weren't already dead. A distant shot yanked me from my guesswork. Then another, from down near the creek. And that meant the hanging tree, a big cottonwood with a stout horizontal limb near the creek bank, where the population of doubtful had been reduced from time to time. I didn't like the sound of all that. I raced in that direction, a handgun in one hand, my sawed-off scattergun in the other. A couple of men were racing that way, too. A few others were heading the opposite direction, getting out of harm's way. Two more shots, rifle fire if I gauged it right, shattered the morning. I had no idea what was happening, but I intended to stop it. I got past the mercantile and cut through an alley, and then past a row of houses whose rear yards ended up in the creek bottoms, and there it all came clear, even as a rifle cracked and the bullet ripped through the branch of a cottonwood near me. I ducked, studied the scene, and didn't like what was right there in front of my eyes. The hooligans were there, all right. On the ground under the tree sat Judge and Mabel Earwig, their hands bound behind them. Mickey was the one using the rifle, and he was holding off half a dozen townspeople, none of whom were armed, unless someone had a revolver. Mickey had plenty of shells, seems like, and didn't hesitate to shoot anything that moved, even 100 yards out. No way we could rush them, and none of us had a long gun. They had strung lariats around the necks of the Earwigs, thrown the lines over the trees, and Big Finn was tying the first of these lines to the saddle horn of one of their stolen horses. I saw a big carriage whip leaning against the cottonwood, and I knew what would happen the moment he got both lines tied to both saddle horns. The horses would bolt under the whip, the lines would yank the Earwigs up, up, and up, and probably pull their heads off. There's no good way to die, but this would be the worst.
You, Finn, drop that line, now!
Mickey replied with a shot that burned through my hat and knocked it off. I settled lower, hugging dirt. I had some quick decisions to make. Everyone else was scared off. Mickey was pumping lead at anything within 100 yards. I was closer than that, maybe 200 feet. My sawed-off shotgun wasn't worth spit.
Let them go! Right now!
I edged left. I could shoot the horses or shoot 12-year-old Finn. Shooting the horses wouldn't work. It took only a whip crack to hang the Earwigs, whether or not the horses had a revolver bullet in them. The boy, then. And there was no time to feel bad about it. I lay prone, leveled up my .44 as best I could, and targeted Finn. He'd finished tying the lines to the saddle horns and was reaching for his whip. I shot. Finn toppled. Blood bloomed on his chest. I felt like hell. The horses skittered, yanking the Earwigs to their feet. Mickey quit firing and ran to fetch the whip. Finn writhed a few times and then lay still. I shot Mickey in his arm. The horses skittered around again, yanking the Earwigs to and fro, but not lifting them up. It was as tough a deal as I'd ever seen. I had to get those horses and keep them from bolting. Anything could do it, including the smell of blood. If they bolted, the Earwigs would die after all. Shaking, I circled clear around until I could approach him from the front. Mickey was holding his arm. I began to calm those skittery nags, just trying to woe up their instincts, and they let me come in. I got a hold of the bridles of both,
and backed them up until the earwigs were no longer on their tiptoes and could stand and then sit. Mabel was weeping. The hanging judge was looking mighty stern. He'd sentenced a few to their fate at this very tree. There was still danger, but the town folks, George Waller leading the race, slipped in and began loosening the lariats around the earwigs' necks and then cut their hands loose. I held them horses tight until it was over. Big Finn was dead, looking quiet and innocent on the clay, not a line in his face, as peaceful as some altar boy.
Oh.
Mickey held his arm, and I found a handkerchief and tied off the wound that had torn a lot of flesh. He'd live if he didn't bleed to death. The boys' horses were tied nearby, packed and ready to go. Revenge and run, but it hadn't worked out like that. One orphan boy was dead, the other might die, and faced a life pounding rock and enjoying the hospitality of the territory of Wyoming. Earwig just sat on the ground and stared, too shaken to talk. But then he looked up and offered me two words.
Thank you.